for the invitation. Glad to be back at Perimeter. So yeah, I want to talk about detecting light dark matter with existing technology. And I want to cover two topics. First, I'd like to look at dark matter nucleus scattering. And this reports some work I've done in collaboration with Chris Covaris, who is also here in the audience. And in the second part, I will speak about dark matter electron scattering and show you some new ideas we have together with Maxime and Adam here in the room, and also Haiping An is working on this. And then advertise at the very end a paper which I've written together with Nicolas Bernal and Xiaoyong Chu. Okay. So we all know what's the name of the game here if you want to make progress in this famous plot of dark matter mass and dark matter nucleon scattering. Two avenues to pursue. The two avenues to pursue is either to build bigger detectors or to build smarter detectors or more sensitive detectors and to lower the thresholds. And so in this first part, I'd like to consider this plane of dark matter mass and nucleon scattering and ask how can we make progress with existing present day technology. And so, of course, you know there's a very simple reason why this plane is so blank in the light dark matter region, and the reason is simply kinematic. So if you work out what's the cross section, what's the recoil energy, the maximum recoil energy of a nucleus through a dark matter scattering is just given by a back-to-back scattering. And so Q here is a momentum transfer, say you have a detector which is able to detect 500 eV nuclear recoil energy, and say you have a dark matter particle mass of 1 GeV, then in order to make a 500 eV recoil, you need a minimum velocity. If you scatter on oxygen of 600 kilometers per second, then on xenon of 1,700 kilometers per second. So if dark matter is lighter than a GeV, there are no particles bound to this galaxy which are able to produce a recoil larger than 0.5 keV on xenon. And so there's sort of a kinematical no-go theorem how we go to low masses. So, and of course, this has prompted a lot of activity looking for experimental alternatives, namely dark matter electron scattering, or producing dark matter directly in density frontier searches, or are coming up with a completely new technology. Here I'd like to propose an alternative way how we can actually gain access to dark matter through nuclear scatterings. And the process is very simple. Instead of looking at the elastic scattering, let's just look at the inelastic scattering, where the nucleus, through the interaction, emits a photon. So this photon is not coming from a nuclear excitation, but it's a continuum photon. It's a Bremsstrahl photon, basically. And then if you work out in this very simple three-body kinematics what's the maximum photon energy, you will find that if dark matter is much lighter than nuclear mass, parametrically, the photon endpoint energy is much larger than the recoil endpoint energy. And so that's really one of the main keys for our proposal here, is energetically this process is favored. And the second key is that experimentally, it's very hard to measure soft nuclear recoils, but say 0.5 keV photon relative to a 0.5 nuclear recoil is never missed in a detector.
Doesn't have to be a photon.
No, right. Yes, of course, it's just of course, absolutely. Yes. All right, so let me show you here what's the naive way of describing this process. This is very well known. You can immediately write the matrix element for this process in a factorized way, where you have the ordinary matrix element of elastic scattering times a gauge invariant piece here, which is now enhanced by a factor of C, so the charge of the nucleus. And having this here, you can write down the cross section for the scattering, and also the cross section factorizes. And so in a few lines, we can work out what's the size of this process. And it turns out there is, of course, a price to pay for going from the elastic to the inelastic channel. And the first price to pay is factor of alpha here in the, if you attach a photon, but that gets overcompensated for large C nuclei like xenon. And so that's actually not a suppression. The suppression comes in from the necessity of accelerating the nucleus and make it Bremsstrahl, basically. So there's a Q squared suppression, which translates into a factor of ER or MN, and that gives a pretty large suppression factor of 7 orders of magnitude for xenon and a smaller suppression for lighter nuclei. So the question is, can we overcome the suppression? And the answer is yes, because elastic nuclear recoil rates are typically exponentially rising functions when lowering the recoil energy, and so we can tap sort of this part of the spectrum, which is usually invisible in detectors with finite nuclear recoil threshold. All right, and so this is in pictures what we were proposing. So here you can see the dotted line is the elastic scattering rate. It gets cut off by the escape velocity in the galaxy. And here, now many orders of magnitude suppressed, you see this Bremsstrahl rate, which actually seeps out of the elastic rate. And so we can tap this part of the spectrum, and you see it goes out to a few kV.
Is your x-axis true nuclear recoil energy or apparent?
There's no quenching factor here. Oh, but it's xenon, yeah.
Right. There's no quenching?
No, it's no quenching here.
Because if you did, the effect would be even more stark.
Yes, that's true. I'll come back very briefly to that a little later. So, of course, this is a sort of a very naive picture of how we imagine the photon being emitted from the nucleus. We can be a little bit more comprehensive and think about this process in the atomic physics way. So what happens there is the dark matter particle comes in, it hits the nucleus, and then if the interaction is fast enough, it will momentarily create a dipole between the electron cloud that surrounds the nucleus and the nucleus itself. And so you polarize the atom in the scattering. And then on that dipole, you can emit a photon. And there are certain conditions for this picture to hold, and they are actually fulfilled in our case. All right, and so we went through this exercise of calculating Bremsstrahlung in this atomic physics picture. And so the matrix element now is sort of a product of where you have first a factor where you boost the nucleus, so you give it a kick and you boost it relative to the electron cloud, and then you have a factor here which is a dipole emission matrix element of the photon. And so then, of course, in this process, principle, you start out with some atomic initial state I, and you end up with an arbitrary initial state F. But if you take I equals F, and so the really elastic dark matter atom scattering case, then in this leading contribution gives you a cross-section of this form, where this factor of alpha here, it's called the polarizability of the atom. So you momentarily polarize the atom, it goes back into its ground state and emits a photon. And what's very important is that once the photon energy becomes large, you're not sensitive anymore to the electronic structure of the atom, and so everything goes back to the naive result with the 1 over omega scaling. But for low enough photon emission energies, the scaling is actually omega cubed, which is the canonical dependence of dipole emission. So it's very nice. So this convinced us that things are under control. And here, now you see this dotted line was the naive expectation of this process. And now this the solid blue line is the Bremsstrahlung cross-section where we draw from atomic data listings on this polarizability. And at high photon energies, they perfectly agree. And at low energies, they look a little bit different. You don't see this omega 3, omega to the third cutoff because the polarizability of xenon is just large. And so it kicks in at lower energies. All right, so how can we detect this? Of course, liquid xenon experiments are the Swiss knife tool for doing this. And so let me, Raphael has already nicely explained how these detectors work. Let me just explain it to you again, sort of the Mickey Mouse minimal understanding of a theorist that is needed to put limits on this. And then you can, of course, experimentalists will not agree to this, but this is the level of sophistication we believe we need. So, okay, so I'm only considering electron recalls now. So heat losses are negligible, and you deposit an initial energy, ER, and it gets partitioned into ionization. So you produce electron-ion pairs, and you produce a bunch of excited atoms. The excited atoms will go back to its ground state through a process, what is called scintillation, and they emit a certain number of scintillation photons. And the ions, which escape the interaction point, they are then drifted in this in the electric field here. And there's a redistribution among this partition of ions and electrons, ions and gammas through the process of recombination. And of course, all these quantities are sought experimentally in order to get a good understanding of the detector. And then there's a certain number, hopefully a large fraction of these electrons that survive the drift and then go into the gas phase. And once they do, they also produce a scintillation with an amplification of essentially a factor of 100, and that sends the S2 and the S1 signal. And importantly, at each point here in this picture, everything fluctuates, is subject to fluctuations, and so the as a theorist, to put a limit, what you need to do is to derive the probability distribution function S1 and S2 that describes this process. And that's an experimental result here, S1 versus S2, and these blobs, you have seen them before. That basically shows you now the PDF of these processes given a certain energy input, and you see nicely this anti-correlation, which allows you to calibrate the detector. Okay. Doing that sort of thing allows us to then use the Bremsstrahlung process to put limits on light dark matter. And so this is shown now here. And so now we are here on the MeV scale, dark matter nuclear scattering. And CREST has the leading limit down to 500 MeV. And then below that, Bremsstrahlung allows you to actually gain sensitivity in this lower mass region. And here I show you all these various limits coming from the liquid xenon experiments, plus some CREST projections. Yes?
Sorry, so which are your limits on the mass?
The colors.
So you're saying in each of those detectors, if you
in each of those detectors, so these are the respective limits. So actually, so xenon 1 ton is currently the most sensitive one. And, yeah. So importantly, it was already mentioned a couple of times this morning that there's a ceiling to this process. At some point, when the cross section becomes too large, particles don't get to your detector. They lose energy on the way, and there's a certain line here where all these limits disappear simply because there's no flux at the detector. And I think Chris has a student who actually worked out in great detail Monte Carlo simulations quantifying this process, and so we are able to do this more accurately in the future. All right, I should say that these limits here are derived in a simpler way, in a sense that I don't take the full PDF in S1 and S2, but I just project onto either S1 or S2. But there was a follow-up paper by Chris McCabe I want to point you to, and he actually looked at the full PDF in S1 and S2, and there's a nice observation here, is that for these Bremsstrahl photons, if you go towards light dark matter, the region where these photons make a signal, sort of it drops down from the electron recall band into the nuclear recall band. And so it drops down into a region of less background. And so you're using a detailed modeling of the detector allows you to improve the xenon limits by another order of magnitude, basically. So that's what you gain if you take the detailed signal morphology into account. All right. I should say that this method basically favors leptophobic dark matter models, because if you scatter on electrons, there is already sensitivity to MeV scale dark matter. And here's a very simple model of dark matter coupled to gauge baryon number, where you can see that the irradiatively induced dark matter electron scattering cross section is still smaller than the sort of the tree level mediated dark matter nucleus scattering. I should also point you to a paper of Maxime and collaborators who show that these sort of models are also severely constrained, and you can't go to arbitrary large cross sections here. All right. Yes, please. Right. There is, yes, yes. So this is on our to-do list, and there is a Dharma. It's all recorded. there's a Dharma paper which considers this process, and we can discuss this later. So I think there is work to do, definitely. So since this is also a neutrino conference, let me also show you a plot which is not in the paper, but you can also consider the contribution of this Bremsstrahlung to the neutrino flow if you want. And basically, energetically, this is a prospective process, because if you think of a PP neutrino with 400 kV energy in this 2-3 process, this photon could pick up the 400 kV, basically, and then you get a very strong signal in the detector. It just turns out that using this solar neutrino flux, the rates are pretty small, so this is not very prospective. But bonus material number two, this comes back to this quenching that was asked earlier. If you're having the gamma being emitted in a detector, you don't suffer a quenching factor. And in particular, for sodium iodine, with a sodium quenching factor of 0.2, the Bremsstrahlung sort of allows you to move a favored region into the lower dark matter mass region. And so here I show you a fit to the modulation amplitude coming only from the Bremsstrahlung. And you can identify a region, a new Dharma island, where you explain Dharma with Bremsstrahlung. Should have written this paper a few years ago, a few years earlier before CMS Light was out. Anyway, this is just to keep you awake. OK. Very briefly, I want now to go to the second subject, namely dark matter electron scattering. And so here are limits now in the MeV range. And again, we have sort of a kinematical no-go theorem number two here, because if dark matter drops below 5 MeV mass, then the kinetic energy is not large enough to make ionization in these liquid scintillator detectors. And so again, all these limits go away for below 10 MeV. But what can we do in this case? We can use the sun as a particle accelerator. And so we are envisioning dark matter coming into the sun. It's getting scattered on the hot electrons. So in contrast to heavy dark matter, where the kinetic energy of dark matter is large, if dark matter mass becomes small, kinetic energy becomes smaller than the typical kinetic energy of electrons inside the sun. And so in a scattering of electrons with dark matter gains energy. And so after a few scatterings, it gets emitted from the dark matter gets emitted from the sun, and it travels towards the Earth, and it hits us with a hotter spectrum. So this is shown here. So you have a Maxwell-Boltzmann distribution of galactic dark matter. A fraction of it comes inside the sun, gets re-emitted at a high energy. And so these are the fluxes. Of course, the fraction of the flux is relatively smaller. Basically, the maximum flux you can get is the projection of the solid angle of the sun on the sky, and that's a factor of 10 to the minus 5. And so we can again go through the exercise of computing the dark matter electron scattering spectra. And here, these are shown by the orange lines here. And importantly, since we have now dark matter with kinetic energies on the order of kV coming out of the sun, because the core temperature of the sun is just 1.5 kV, we have enough energy to actually deposit more than 0.2 keV in a detector. And so there's a nice measurement from Lux, which measures charge yield down to 0.2 keV. And so we can actually, we don't need to statistical modeling in this usual dark matter electron business, where you estimate the number of ionized electrons out of a statistical model, but you can actually draw on data to put the limit. And this is shown here by the dotted line. So if you require a certain minimum deposited energy, then you get this dotted line here. And you do this for xenon-10, for xenon-100. There are some technicalities in the evaluation of what's the matrix element. Let me also skip over this. And just tell you that now we are also able to not only look at ionized electrons, but also at the scintillation, just because we have enough energy to do this. And so this here is a xenon-100. The blue histograms are the observed events. And here you see the scintillation signal for a 1 MeV dark matter in this cross-section. And then Lux 2013. So this is a Lux paper, a search for axions in the 2013 data set, which I put out this year. And we can also put a limit from that. And then, of course, xenon-1 ton, which is here. And putting it all together, that's the plot we get. So now you see xenon-1 ton gives the leading limit. They become strongest when dark matter mass is about the electron mass, because then you have the maximum energy transfer. It fizzles out for if dark matter becomes heavy, because you only can transfer, say, m electron over m dark matter energy in each scattering. And so you need a few hundred scatterings to really gain enough energy. And likewise for very small dark matter masses. And this is shown until the warm dark matter limit here. OK, so to wrap up this part here, let me tell you that so we derived these limits using a data-driven approach. We can use the fact that now we have kV scale kinetic energies. And so ionization from lower shells also become important. And again, similarly to the Bremsstrahlung case, if we work with the full PDF, there's actually potential of improving these limits by another order of magnitude. OK, last 2 minutes. I just want to advertise another paper discussing SIMPs, so strongly interacting massive particles, which are sort of a prototypical light-dark matter category, if you want. And they're two canonical models. I mean, first are the non-perturbative SIMPs that look at, say, 5-point interactions of composite particles. But there are also perturbative versions. For example, already a lambda phi to the fourth theory would be a version of a SIMP model of this type. And basically, these models have a built-in tension of self-scattering versus successful relic density, because now the relic density is purely, so here in these models, you don't need to say anything about the coupling to the standard model. Everything happens in the dark sector. So you deplete these particles through number violating processes like 4 to 2 or 3 to 2. Given this process here, you induce self-scattering processes, and there is a tension between making these models work. And so we have a.
So the lambda to the S to the fourth, that doesn't go to the predictive bound or like the generative bound E3? Like, usually you.
Well, this paper here, they considered this simple model. You can look it up there. But it's, yeah, lambda shouldn't be too small. Shouldn't be too large, yeah. But it works. But the problem there in that model was that the self-scattering is too large. And the dumbest thing you can do is you give the particles a little mass splitting. So then they don't have enough kinetic energy to make the self-scattering. And that's what we considered in this paper this year. But the nice thing is now that we have a little mass splitting, and we have GV scale or MeV scale dark matter. And once we couple this to the standard model, we can induce processes that lead to a de-excitation. So it's like excited dark matter, but now on electrons. And so what happens is that basically you probe the wave function at a Q square, which corresponds to the delta M of the splitting. And again, you can derive limits on the kinetic mixing parameter versus dark matter mass. And so I think this is also an avenue which can be explored further in this business with liquid xenon experiments. Right, so let me conclude. I tried to convince you that we already, with existing direct detection experiments, we have sensitivity below the GV scale for dark matter nucleus scattering, just by looking at the inelastic channel of photon emission. And for electron recalls, we can use the sun as a partly accelerator to push these limits even further in mass. And lastly, I showed you some SIMP models, which also can make some nice direct detection features. Thank you very much.
This idea of using the sun as a particle accelerator, that's also provide an anomalous cooling of the sun. Is this dangerous?
Oh, obscuring of the sun.
Cooling.
Cooling.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Loss
of
energy.
Sorry?
Loss
Banish.
Of energy.
Loss of
energy. Loss of energy. You mean you produce these particles or?
No.
No.
You subtract energy from the
sun. So that's the time.
Yeah.
We have checked.
It should
be very, very tiny.
That was the question.
Okay.
The tiny.
He has checked it.
I haven't
checked it.
We have checked that.
Okay.
You have
I think it's the royal we.
About that acceleration in the sun, so dark matter can be accelerated in stars that you would expect some evaporation from the galactic halo from that, which in turn should be able to place a bomb.
Yeah, so the. So you can again answer this question geometrically. So you basically ask what's the fraction of the solid angle of all stars in the Milky Way on the sky, and it's a very small number. And so
what does it get? Around 4 billion of years, so that's not.
Well, no, but the particles also, I mean, they escape, right? It's not like.
That's what I'm saying.
Sorry?
If you had that process, that would be a process by which you can evaporate the dark matter halo.
Evaporated. That I don't think is efficient enough. So the flux is very small, basically. I mean, so I think it's a.
We are very close.
It's something for the very, very far future.
Yes.
Could you go back to the plot with the new limits going down to KeV for electron recoil? So right there. So if I have dark matter with that size of a cross section below an MeV, I would imagine that it has a thermal distribution to chemical equilibrium with the standard model at temperatures that overlap with BBN, right?
Yeah, this is Thank you for pointing that out. These models are not easy to make work. I would say this is sort of, it shows you a benchmark. I mean, there are proposals of, say, for example, using superconductors, and they show you what are the projections they can have, and so one should view this in this picture. That's the sensitivity you can get rid of. Right now,
one sonic degree of freedom with the masses of a few hundred keV, but could possibly tolerate, but not 10.
So how general is the model that you can get accelerated by the sun and then just like enhance the detection?
Well, here we use the simplest case where the dark matter electron scattering in the rest frame, in the center mass frame, so it's isotropic, but you can consider other operators where it's forward scattering files and so on, so it will affect the limits.
And the mass range that you have affects from where to where?
So if the cross section is larger than, say, about 10 minus 36, right, then the sun starts becoming opaque. Mm-hmm. So that's when you get the limits. And then for heavy dark matter, it takes quite a number of scatterings before you get enough energy. And so that determines this part here.
All right. Shall we thank Joseph and...